Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. Happy hump day, everybody. Talking some USC Trojan football. Just two practices left this spring, if you can believe that. 13 down, two to go, including the quote-unquote spring game, final practice, whatever you want to call it, on Saturday at Cromwell Field at noon on the USC campus. You can check that out. It's open to the public. We're going to have Dan Weber talking about what we've seen out there at USC practice, get a lot of questions from all of you. You guys have sent in a lot of questions for Dan, so we'll try to get to them all. Questions going forward, you can send it to podcast@uscfootball.com. That's our email address, or if you would like to call or text, we've got voicemails and we've got text messages from all of you. The number is 424-254-9141. That's 424-254-9141. Leave us a text or a voicemail. Remember to try to keep it brief, under a minute or so. And we'd love to play it and talk about your topic of interest here on the Peristyle Podcast. Please subscribe. iTunes.com/Peristyle Podcast. We're on iTunes and all the other podcasting apps. If you find one that we're not on, let me know and I'll make sure we get added to that one as well. Leave us a review, 5-star rating. All that stuff is wonderful. We do appreciate that. It helps grow the show. 10 years strong, we've been going, and we're going to keep it going here. We're doing multiple shows per week, even through this quote-unquote off-season, which we never really have an off-season. Dan, there just doesn't seem to be an off-season anymore.
No, I just got the word that the two dates that we always look forward to for the summer, seems like they're coming earlier and earlier. The Pac-12 Media Day, July 25th in Hollywood again, at Hollywood and Highland there. And then practice starts August 3rd, which is a surprise to me because the opener is September 1st. And last year, with an opener later than that, practice started in July. So I have to check that, why practice doesn't start till August 3rd. But anyway, we've got those two dates, so we're definitely looking at down the road at next year already, for sure.
Yeah. Maybe later start so you can get more time for JT Daniels to get ready. I don't know.
Is that the way to start, or do you start in July and give JT, 5 or 6 weeks?
Yeah.
True. I think that's certainly the story that's going to hang over the next 2-3 months as we get there. And, you just know you're not getting away from that story. It's interesting. I was just thinking about this. If you had to see how the quarterback thing is setting up, if you had two really good athletic running quarterbacks who you might consider a little bit scatter-armed based on their performance in the spring, what would you do with two quarterbacks, one of whom could play for the other one? You could basically have them interchangeable, and they were really athletic and they could really run. What would you do with them in the spring for a team that's, quote, run first? Wouldn't you probably run them a little bit?
Sure.
Have they run these guys almost any more than they ran Sam? Not much.
No.
Which makes you wonder, are they running an offense that JT Daniels is going to be able to run, to use the expression, when he gets here? Because the more I think about it, I mean, let's look at, say, Central Florida last year and how well they played with that run-pass quarterback. That little scrambler, wasn't a super, super athlete, but he was competitive as heck. And if you were thinking about how you would, make Matt Fink and Jack Sears as effective as they could be, wouldn't you think you'd put a lot of it in terms of their run game, their own run game. And wouldn't that, if you're going to try to make play action the way you're going to throw the ball, if you got a running quarterback, isn't play action even more effective, you know, for the quarterback? So the more I look back at spring now and realize they haven't done much in terms of putting in the run game for the quarterbacks, I wonder, are they waiting for a quarterback who they think can really throw the ball down the field? And that's going to be the offense. I don't know.
But, we just don't know.
It makes you think though, doesn't it? That it's surprising now that we look at spring ball, how little they've done of putting in the quarterback run with two athletes who can run the ball.
Yeah, I've seen some sprint outs and stuff, but not really a whole bunch of you know, quarterback keepers and stuff. So I don't know. We'll see. There's been some. I think there's been a few more than what we've seen with Sam Darnold, but you
a
would
few
think
more.
That, yeah.
But it's not like the I'm just thinking that makes your run game even more effective if you really, you know, going to believe in it. I mean, just, you know, Ohio State beat USC running the quarterback. Oklahoma did a pretty good job running the quarterback. You know, Clemson hasn't done a bad job with a quarterback that they could certainly scramble and run with. And it's not like it's a concept that's just kind of unheard of. Now, if, you know, the offense you've seen in the spring would be the offense probably you'd run with JT Daniels. But is it the best offense if it's Matt Fink and Jack Sears? I don't know. I mean, one of the things you might have a hesitation if you've only got one quarterback and you think, gosh, if we run him and he gets hurt, now what do we do? And that's what stops the NFL, I think, so often from doing that because, you know, they don't have a backup that could do what you know, the running quarterback does. But when you've got two of them, I don't know. It just makes me wonder. Might be a good question to ask Clay now the more that we've seen this and have to wonder what exactly does run first mean if you've got a couple of running, potentially running quarterbacks and you're not running first with them? Because the more we see them throw the ball, the more you think run first sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get into that a little bit more, of course, with the quarterback competition and all that. Before we do, I wanted to thank our longtime sponsor, Trader Joe's. They've been great to us over the past year or so, and Dan and I both love going to Trader Joe's. There's, of course, the new one at USC at the University Village, USC Village. So that's a pretty cool one. If you go down to campus, if you're going down this weekend to check out the spring game, they didn't let us do a tailgate on campus. We were trying to do something with Trader Joe's, but you can still go over to Trader Joe's and check it out. I definitely recommend walking over and seeing the Village, and Trader Joe's is one of the key parts of doing that. So they've been in business 50 years. We've been doing the podcast for 10. They've been in business for 50. So they've been doing it a long time. I love going there to my little local one in Hermosa Beach. And Dan, I know, Dan, you love going to yours as well.
Yeah. As an aside, walking to practice yesterday, walking behind a USC fan, a very sweet lady in a wheelchair. And as she was moving along the sidewalk, I just happened to notice on the back of her wheelchair, she had her Trader Joe's bag with all the USC football stuff and what have you, and had her, you know, that was her carry bag on her wheelchair was her really cool Trader Joe's bag. I didn't get a chance to tell her to be careful with a collector's item yet, but it was nice to see she had all her stuff in her Trader Joe's bag.
Nice. Yeah, those are very popular bags. So we will try to do an event, like I said, probably later in the summer or during fall camp with Trader Joe's, where we'll be able to give those bags away again. So I think we gave around 600 of them out in front of Trader Joe's in August. So maybe we'll do another one like we did last year in August. But we tried to do it for spring, got shut down. So we'll go forward and do something this summer or early fall. We got a lot of questions, Dan. So we'll try to get them all.
Okay.
Let's see. We'll go to Dominic, the first one. He said, question for you, D-Dub. Do you think the USC defense can be the best in the Pac-12 this season? What do you think?
They better be. I mean, I don't know that there should be a year that they're not. I mean, when you look at the recruiting, what would keep USC defense, you know, obviously they got sidetracked, you know, with the NCAA sanctions and what have you. But year after year, USC has more athletes, and, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, going out and doing it. But, yeah, I would, you know, I just, there shouldn't be anybody, you know, and you know, Washington has, you know, solidified themselves, you know, obviously up there. But I just think you got to go in year after year if you're USC thinking, you know, we got the best defense in the Pac-12, and you know, and we're going to, you know, make it really difficult for people to score on us. I just think, I mean, I know it seems like, oh, gosh, that's kind of radically different from how it's been. But it's not radically different from how it should be. So, yeah, I think realistically, I don't think they're just blowing smoke to say, you know, this defense should be. I mean, when you look at and I know it's difficult when you look at the secondary as well as they, you know, played this spring, and you look at, you know, Marvell Tell and his physicality, and you look at Biggie and his improvement in terms of how hard he's working and gotten rid of some of the handsy stuff and, you know, all of that, and just playing on technique and athleticism. And you see a Jenna, as Clay was talking about, how his leadership, and you see those guys without, you know, without a Jack Jones for the spring, and you think, gosh, you know, shouldn't they just get better? You get Jack Jones, you get the two you know, top freshman recruits coming in, you see a kid like you know, Talanoa Hufanga, who just looks like he's been there forever, who talks about, you know, wants to you know, follow Troy Polamalu in his footsteps from, you know, Oregon to USC. And you just think, you know, what is there to stop these guys, you know, from being that, you know, that kind of a defense? So, yeah, I would think absolutely yes.
Let's see. Along the same defensive lines, we have a text question from Marcellus in Las Vegas. Dan has consistently written about his confidence in this year's defense. With the offense progressing slowly, have Clay or Clancy openly expressed that we will be a defense-first team? Do they even want that? Because it seems like we should be setting that tone early. Thanks, fight on, from Marcellus.
Marcellus, actually, you used the words. Yesterday, Clay... Clay pretty much said absolutely that. And he did qualify it with the word you just used early, that USC is going to have to be a defense first team early in the year, a team that, you know, has to depend on the defense to keep you in those games and get that offense ready to, you know, to come around. They've got a good, you know, tune-up opener. We'll see how they approach it, you know, especially with the whole quarterback situation. And, you know, you've also got the situation of what do you show, you know, to, Stanford and Texas? How much do you, you know, let's say if you are going to, what we were talking about before, say you're going to run the quarterbacks and seriously run the quarterback. Do you do that against UNLV? Or do you wait till the next 2 weeks? Those are interesting questions and not obvious answers. But I think there's clearly the answer in their minds is they really have to be a defense-first team early in the year, and they've got to use their defense to just keep people, especially on the road. I think that's how you win road games, and I'll say it a million times. If I were, you know, around, I would show that YouTube highlight of the 2003 USC at Auburn game over and over and over and over. That's how you win games on the road against good football teams. You just don't let their offense play. You just take them out of the game. And I think they have to start thinking that, okay, we've got the kind of defense that could maybe do that. That's asking a lot. I mean, those guys, they had Lofa Tatupu and Matt Grudegood and Sean Cody and Kenechi Udeze and, you know, Mike Patterson, and they just went after him. I mean, they just beat Auburn up. I mean, it just flat out. Auburn didn't want to play. By the end of the game, Auburn wanted to just, you know, get off the field. They didn't want to keep playing. That's what you want this defense to be able to do. And I think it's an achievable goal, especially in the Pac-12. It absolutely is achievable, and I think they gotta start thinking in those terms. So I think you're onto something, Russ Ellis.
I think he is too. Okay, let's see. Let's move over to Eric in Duck Country. If the UNLV game were tomorrow, what would the starting offensive line look like? And do you think this is the best combination? Thanks as always, Eric in Duck Country.
Well, that's a good question. I think we're, I don't know. I know a lot of people think Toa Lobanon is absolutely written in as the starting center. I'm not absolutely, completely convinced of that. Is he going to be one of the guys? And I know the thought is for him going to the NFL is the ability to play all the positions. But is there somewhere else that, you might say, as well as the two freshman centers have played, do you give one of them or do you go with the two of them at that position? And you say, well, we could use Toa more, here or here. So I think we're maybe, a little bit ahead of ourselves to try to figure that out. When you got, three guys that they're pretty pleased with at center. So you got Toa and then, redshirt freshman Brett Nealon and Justin Dedich. They've really liked the two freshmen. So, but at right guard, you've got, Andrew Voorhees, and at right tackle, you've got Chuma Adoga. And Chuma, has all the talent in the world, the ability to focus, and he's had some, back tightening issues and that where he hasn't finished all the practices. But again, that would be the place where you have the ability. I think that might be right tackle might be the one place that Toa hasn't started a game at. But you do have that ability. Then at left guard you got Chris Brown, and left tackle with Austin Jackson not having worked the last few practices, didn't make the Saturday scrimmage. It certainly looks like Clayton Johnson is the guy there, but that's a position again that Toa has played and both of the guard spots. So I think it's kind of in that general area. I don't know that I see any of the true first year guys in terms of the redshirt freshmen closing the gap right now. I was kind of hopeful of that, but I think one of the things that's happened is the starters from last year look like they look a little different. They look like they're more in a physical attack mode. I think they're more, they know what happened in the Ohio State game. They remember what happened in the Alabama game 2 years ago. I think they know that can't happen this year. So I think they've coached them up a little differently. They've schemed it a little differently. I don't think they're, as outnumbered as at the point of attack at times as they seemed to be last year, the way they're, scheming up the run game. You've got a couple of 215-pound running backs behind them who look pretty comfortable running that power downhill, kind of game, which wasn't exactly, Ronald Jones's game. So I think it's all going together. But I don't know that I'm going to make a pick in terms of exactly who's going to be where if they were playing UNLV tomorrow. I think there's a lot still to go in terms of this offensive line.
Let's see. We're going to move on to, I guess, keeping with the offensive line, Troy 75. Any consideration given to moving Murphy? So I think he's talking about Connor Murphy. Playing offensive tackle. He has great size and tremendous agility. Seems like he could make it to the next level with those attributes. Fight on from Troy 75.
Huh, that's interesting. I have not thought about that. The tremendous agility, if that would prove to be the case, would help him as a defensive lineman as well. But he's got that, that 6'7" frame and, long arms and all that. That's an interesting thought, especially, at one of those tackle spots. I don't know that we've seen it work all that well, the switches from offense to defense on the, you know, the front line guys. But that's an interesting thought. We'll see. I mean, I know he's 260 now, which wouldn't be nearly big enough, probably, you know, just wouldn't be. But he certainly has a frame that, you know, could be 290, 300, whether that's necessarily good for an athlete to put on that kind of weight or not, or whatever. It's worth thinking about. I'm not sure. I think he's got the toughness. I don't know that we always see the kind of quick twitch ability that you need to play on the edge, which is why on defense, which is why you see him with his hand down, you know, at the line of scrimmage more now. It's an interesting thought. I don't know. I might raise that with somebody, but interesting thought. That's a good one.
A couple more defenders on this one. It's a text question from Chris. He's from Long Beach, but he lives in San Francisco. He said, how are Christian Rector and Liam Jimmins looking? How heavy do they look? Fight on from Chris.
I think they, you know, they look kind of where they, I don't know that I've noticed a big change in either one of them. I think they're, you know, they're where they want to be. They want, you know, I think Christian is just one of those guys that seems to, you know, get into the right place at the right time. He's got an elusiveness about him, a kind of a flexibility that allows him to be, you know, I know they think of him as passing down specialist guy. I think he's played the run pretty well this spring. As far as Liam Jimmins, he's been in there, you know, the whole time with this, you know, with that second group, and he's a big, strong, you know, athletic looking guy. And I just think, you know, that movement and just, you know, being, you know, in the right place and having the right reaction, being able to play with your hands and do all the things you need to do. But I think they're counting on him more now. They've got, you know, you've got the on the more of the inside, the 1-3 technique guys. You've got the, you know, Brandon Peely and Marlon Tui Palutu and Jay Tofelli. So you got some competition there of the big bodied kids, but you know, they got a lot of guys that can you know, play in and out of that lineup, and it'll be interesting to see how the rotation works and, you know, how hard they go with them and what they get out of them. I will say this, Ohio State played, you know, 7 guys up there last year and obviously didn't seem to hurt the Buckeyes at all with that, you know, fairly extensive rotation. And so you would think USC with this group is looking to go in that direction. And if that's the case, Liam would be, I think, a part of the mix.
We had a couple of questions from Paul in Santa Clarita. His first one, you talked about a little bit. He said, are you seeing the quarterbacks participating in drills to help them avoid hits similar to the running back trash can drill? Should they be participating in these types of drills since the expectation is they will be asked to carry the ball more?
You know, that's a good thought, and you don't see it as much with quarterbacks. I think it's hard coaching quarterbacks in terms of how much physicality. I mean, I thought that was always the hard thing in evaluating the, you know, the Sam Darnold, Max Brown, you know, battle back and forth, was you couldn't put them under real game physical pressure that Sam thrived, you know, he was just, you know, waiting for that. He couldn't, you know, wait to play against it, handle it. But as far as, you know, doing running back drills with the quarterbacks, interesting. It's another, you guys are coming up with interesting questions. That's a question to ask Brian Ellis, I think. I don't know that we've seen a lot of absolute focus on quarterbacks as running backs. I think when they do quarterback specialty stuff, it's quarterback specialty stuff. It's ball handling, it's movement, and it's throwing the ball. I think that's worth talking about. I mean, one of the things with quarterbacks is even in full tackle scrimmages, they don't get tackled. So they don't have that much of an opportunity to really work on their, you know, ball security skills, then and obviously that, you know, probably cost USC, probably cost Sam Darnold last year, because it's just not a way exactly to do it. But maybe incorporating some of the you know, DeLand McCullough stuff, huh? Give away, if you see them doing that, you'll know they maybe had a change of heart in terms of the quarterbacks and run first offense. I think that's a good thought.
And his second question was: is Talanoa Hufanga athletic enough to get on the field as a nickelback?
I think he's athletic enough. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's just smooth as can be. He absolutely does not look like he's 215 pounds. Like I had asked him that yesterday again, because it's hard to believe he is 215. He just moves so easily. You know, he basically played every play in high school and did everything he could do with them. So I think he'd be, you know, an excellent nickel. You know, I think there are several different ways he can get on the field. And, you know, you're hoping they're trying to figure those out. I just think he's somebody that USC probably needs on the field. You don't always have that sense about a freshman, but with him, obviously this year, you've got a really, you know, a talent-heavy secondary. I mean, you just start looking at those safeties that haven't played yet. And how many of those guys are there? And yet, it's just his ball skills are really good. He anticipates. He you know, catches everything, and he catches it on the move. I mean, when he catches it, he's not like, okay, now I got it. Now I got to stop going that way, and I'm coming back. He's catching it and moving the other way before he even catches it. So doesn't look like a freshman. Does look like he could be a nickel, without a doubt.
We have a, speaking of defensive backs, we have a voicemail question for you. I'll play it right now.
Hello, how you doing, Ryan? This is Skills D from Los Angeles. Quick question for either Coach Hyde or Dan Weber. I was wondering, far as me being at every practice, it seems to, that is it, that Iman Marshall can't be replaced, because it seemed like Jonathan Lockett been playing well, and I see Iman Marshall more as a linebacker, and he's more stiff in the secondary. So just a question of, can any of those guys be replaced and slide in the fifth year senior Jonathan Lockett, because he's been very impressive. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know if it's got to be either or, you know, that one of them has to replace. First of all, I'll say this. Iman doesn't look like the Iman that I think we've been used to see in terms of maybe some stiffness, in terms of overly competitiveness and not letting somebody run by him and all that kind of thing, where he's focused maybe on coming up and making a tackle and the guy makes a move and he's got to react, and I don't see that this year. I see a guy that's playing first with his feet and his eyes, and I really like what I'm seeing of Iman. I just think he looks like a cornerback now. He didn't always look like a cornerback. He looked like he looked like a safety trying to play corner, or he looked like, you know, a strong safety wanting to come up and bang somebody, you know, and there he is now. He looks like he's a finesse guy. I was kidding there, and I said, used to always use the word physical, and I'm looking at finesse for you right now. So I don't know that you gotta, you know, take Iman out of there, but that doesn't mean that Jonathan, with his strength now, he's not the little guy at 175, he's 185. He's moving better now that he's had his hips, worked on. That's worked really well. He's got that. And a fifth-year senior smarts, and yet he's got the strength. He said, you know, when they do your hips like that, they do, you know, smooth out that cartilage and all of that. He said, you got a lot of chance to work on your upper body while that's healing last year. And so he said he's a lot stronger. He played a fade at at practice in the end zone. Gosh, I'm not trying to think who it was against, but maybe Tyler, maybe Pittman, but just played it as well as you could possibly play it, and playing like a strong, smart senior. So I don't know that you have to be either or. I mean, I could see, you know, both of those guys, you know, on the field together. They've done that some this spring, and you know, I think they're really impressed with Jonathan, as you should be. I mean, I just think he's going to be on the field this year, and so you know, Jack Jones will be back, but not playing in the first game, so I think he's going to have some work to do, you know, to get on the field. But man, it's really nice to see you know, a Jonathan. They have two senior corners. It just doesn't seem like it's been a while since USC kind of goes into a season feeling really good about the corners. And the corners in Clancy's defense, corners are, you know, on an island a lot. They're, you know, they trust them to, you got to take care of this. And I think they've got a chance with these guys. But I could see both of them together. You don't have to sit one of them to play the other.
We had a text question. This is from Clayton. He said, watching Brian Ellis, the quarterback coach, speaking after practice was a breath of fresh air. He seemed to be aware and highlight the problems that everyone else is seeing. That being said, what preparation are being made now to get JT Daniels prepared for the fall competition? I know he's been to practice, but in what ways are the coaches allowed to prepare him? Can he start studying film at home, study the playbook, etc.? Thanks for the great coverage, Clayton, class of 2011.
Yeah, he got the playbook, I guess, the day, you know, after he signed. He can get all the, you know, the practice, get all the videos that he, you know, he can possibly handle. He can get the practice, you know, you see him walking around at practice with the practice plan. You see him as close as he can possibly be, you know, to the quarterbacks and the coaches. They can't coach him up, but they can answer his questions. You know, he can't have a football. But he can go, you know, he can come in, go to their office and sit down and go over stuff with them. It's kind of on him. But I would think everything that they can possibly do, they are doing. Everything that they can legally do, they're doing. I think a lot of that is JT's own doing. I mean, that's who JT is. I mean, that's why he is JT. This is his life. This is all he's ever wanted to do. And so I don't think he's leaving. I mean, they're not having to chase him down to get him to do his USC football stuff. He's doing as much as you can possibly do. And I think he'll be as ready as you could possibly be, having not come in the spring, for what's going to happen in the summer. It's you know, obviously how much that is and all of that, how much is doable, I don't think we can know how much he can do. I mean, you hear the term, and I don't know that I've heard this term for anybody else that I can remember, but the quarterback savant, you know, that he's just one of these, you know, special sort of a, you know, kid that is just sort of, you know, been groomed and destined and, you know, by his own interest to be kind of, you know, one of a kind in terms of how he, you know, approaches the quarterback situation. So we'll see. You know, there were times last year he looked like it. He certainly looked like it in the All-Star game. You know, you had the two kids from Georgia who were, you know, the best quarterbacks in, you know, anybody's ever seen, blah, blah, blah. And obviously JT looked better in the game. He was more, you know, poised and threw the ball more accurately and more comfortable. And everybody says during the week in practice that he was the go-to guy as far as what are we doing, how do we, you know, do this and all that. And here he's coming in off of a junior season. Now he's, you know, the right age as a senior, and he was held back. So he doesn't have an age issue, I don't think, and, you know, started 3 years at Mater Dei. You know, does that transfer? You know, freshman quarterbacks have been transferring from, you know, obviously Alabama wins a national championship with a true freshman quarterback. Georgia got as far as you can go with a freshman quarterback. It's happening. It's a different world out there now. So you would think he's got a chance, but it won't be for USC or JT not doing everything they can possibly do between now and the start of summer practice, August 3rd.
Yeah, 100% there. He's doing whatever he can. We got one from Tarek. When he was hired, Clay Helton said he wanted to have a run-first team, but we have not seen that in the first 2 years. Why would we believe this year will be different when there is another blue-chip quarterback coming in that Helton will fall in love with? Tarek, that's your question for him.
Well, I think the timing might be that it's hard to, as much as we, you might think of JT, or much as, you could make the case for him, he's not going to be Sam Darnold on day one. And I just think they know, you don't know how that's all going to turn out. And it could be, you could make the case for any one of the three. And so I don't think it's what they say. I mean, I just think, we maybe at times, because all the, the videos of all the post-practice pressers and all that kind of thing. I would be skeptical just because somebody says we're going to be run first, that they're going to be run first. Obviously they said it and they weren't. But it's how they coach it, how they approach it, how they scheme it. If you watch last, and I didn't go along with that until last Saturday scrimmage. And at last Saturday, more with the way the offensive line attacked, their blocking responsibilities and attacked a pretty good defensive line. And then you watch a pair of 215-pound running backs who have real skills. I mean, Aka Cedric and Vavai Malapai are just – they're skilled running backs, but they're now 215 pounds, or Vavai's 220, although I think he wants to play at 215. They can make some – they can do some things. And so I'm – and then you figure Stephen Carr – yeah, did a mix a guy with a little bit of a home run threat, and I also think all three of those guys are really good pass receivers, and I'm kind of the belief. I still remember I was the SID at Xavier, and we played in a basketball tournament at Brigham Young, and in December, and they were getting ready for a bowl game, and I remember, and here's the high school football coach in me. I would go out and watch Brigham Young's football practices. Hell, there was nobody around, so they didn't mind. And I remember thinking, sure, they throw the ball a lot, but basically those are just long handoffs. And I think you're going to see, whether you call it run or not, I think you're going to see a lot of throwing the ball to the running backs out of the backfield that, in effect, are going to be low-risk, long handoffs. So I think you're going to see things that that we haven't seen before. I think they're doing things that we haven't seen before. So I don't think you should depend on what they say. I think you got to look at what they're doing. And I think with the combination of what they're doing with the offensive line and the running backs and the way they called, way T. Martin called the scrimmage, Saturday, I think he got into a real run first rhythm that I really liked, and I think that's a comfort level we need to see out of T in the offense. But I think they're moving in that direction, so I don't blame you for being skeptical. But I think what they're doing shows us that I think they more believe in it, and that this is who they have to be. I don't think they've got as many choice. One of the things last year I thought. The negative of having Sam Darnold and having Ronald Jones, the home run hitter, fifth all-time leading rusher, and Deontay Burnett, who ends up as the all-time, record-holding pass receiver in both the Rose Bowl and the Cotton Bowl, is they could do kind of anything they thought. They had this sense of, well, we can do this, or we can do that, or we can do this, or da-da-da-da-da. And I don't know that they ever had that kind of discipline in play calling and scheming and all of that that got them to where in any one given game, this is how they were going to play. And this is how they had to play. And this is absolutely what they were going to do. So when they said run first, I don't think it really meant anything. But I think it does now. I don't think they've got the option of, well, we'll let Sam win it for us. So we'll let Deontay make a bunch of catches, or we'll let, Ronald will break a couple of, those are off the table. So I think it's a different approach, and I do believe it's a different approach. It's not, I don't blame you. You don't have to believe them, but they got to make you believe them with what they do, and they got to believe it themselves. I think they do.
Yeah, I agree. I kind of think they do too, but we'll see. It's just hard to tell. A lot of time between now and the opener. William B. wrote in. He said, my take is that Coach Bradford is more enthusiastic due to, he said, just being able to focus on cornerbacks, as Clancy has the safeties this season, and as others have said, a deeper bench. Finally, Jack Jones isn't around to muddy the water. So no way, no Jack in the mix may be helping Big E focus. That'll make anyone peppier. Just saying, what say you all? Thanks from William B.
I think the B, Williams, stands for bingo. I think the not having Jack Jones around for the spring, I think has made it a better. And we all like Jack, but Jack would be one of those kids, if you were teaching a class, that you might like his personality and his approach and his fun-loving, blah, 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 and all that. But it might not help the class necessarily. So Jack didn't, we do get to see the corners up close. And I mean, that's the one group we get to watch. And last year, Jack had kind of a devil-may-care attitude about whatever the particular teaching point would have been. He might do it. Maybe he wouldn't do it. Maybe he just look at you like, oh, that? He's not there now. And Coach Bradford is really getting after it in terms of detail, in terms of, they're paying attention. And they know, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. But I don't think you're totally wrong that not having Jack there has probably helped things. And I hope that message gets back to Jack that, he's not indispensable. He's not, somebody that they can't do without. And he really has to do what they want him to do the way everybody does it. And there isn't any place for, somebody to just say, hey, I can do it my way. What do they say? Addition by subtraction? Might be.
Pretty tough. Five-star guy you're talking about there. We'll see if it changes the chemistry, too, when he comes back and he's out for the first game. If you remember 2 years ago, Isaiah Langley, who was he wasn't a starter before, but he was poised to be the starting cornerback, got suspended over the offseason and didn't get to play in the Alabama game, and we never really saw much after that. So I'm not saying the same thing's going to happen to Jack Jones, but it's happened 2 years ago to, something similar.
Well, and it's not like, I think the Jonathan Lockett return changes the equation. It might have changed it last year if he'd have been healthy. And then the two incoming freshmen, with all the talent that those guys are bringing in with them. I think competition is a very good thing. And I think in this case, I think competition will do nothing but help here. Nothing but help.
Bear Secuta wrote in, said, Dan, it looks pretty clear that Vaughn's, Pittman, and he says Venus Jones, but I think he means somebody else, are the three best wide receivers right now. Can any of them play in the slot position, though? I.e., can T. Martin get his three best wide receivers on the field at the same time, or does he start, say, Trayvon Sidney or wait, hope for Amon-Ra St. Brown to arrive? That's Bear Secuta.
Honestly, I think they can all play there. I mean, I don't know that you want him there, but, you know, I think Vilas has shown us the ability to play almost anywhere. His improvement, his just, you know, 201 pounds, and his he looks more flexible. He doesn't look like he's looking for a place to fall down. His hands, I mean, you know, I know he talked about catching tennis balls off the jug guns. It really looks like he's, you know, catching, you know, doing that. I mean, he has a whole different look about it. So I think, you know, Vilas is going to be the guy that they move around all over the place. And he looks really comfortable doing that. He looks comfortable running out of the, you know, the flanker reverse stuff and the jet sweeps. And so I think those three can play together. I don't think there's any question that they can. And it really depends on what they're going to do, you know, in terms of the run game and with the slot guy and how they're going to block him and all that kind of thing. Who you put there, but I'm pretty comfortable with those three. And then Amon-Ra, I just think he's got to be a factor. He's his confidence and his strength and, you know, his hand and all of that. You know, that's one of those positions where you can walk in the summer and get on the field in the fall. And so now they just got to get the ball to. I mean, I think those guys can all do what you need receivers to do and what however grouping you do, you just got to get the ball to them at this point, you know, feel comfortable and confident that you can get the ball to those guys. But when you talk to T says this group as a group can be as good or better than any group he's had at USC. That, you know, covers a lot of territory. But I think they're pretty happy about the wide receivers just as wide receivers. Now, getting them a ball consistently is going to be the key. But yeah, I think they can all – they're all pretty confident in – whatever, you know, position, you know, they end up in. I don't get the sense that, you know, oh, he can't go there, whatever. That's kind of not how they've been coaching him in recent years. They kind of, you know, look for guys that can, you know, line up anywhere. And I think this group can do that.
We got a question from Mark from Crown City. He says, hey, Ryan and Dan. Having attended last week's practices and Saturday's scrimmage and watched the new-look Trojan offense, is it fair to say that Coach Drevno has had a significant impact in moving the quarterbacks under center more often, and as well as bringing in heavy blocking packages? The changes have paid dividends with a young, hungry offensive line, and the power backs both Sed and Vavai have now become. Also, if Coach Drevno's presence has resulted in this type of long overdue offensive scheme adjustment, what does that say for his likely assumption of the offensive coordinator role once T finally bites on a head coaching role next season? We can only hope. That's fight on, Mark from Crown City.
Mark, I think, you know, Drevno was only here, barely a couple of weeks at that. And I know one thing, you know, you talked to him, he said, I haven't even watched any film of last year and all that. It certainly helps that he walked in there, but I think T has known what they have to do. I don't think there's any question about that. I think Clay knows what they got to do. I think Neil Calloway knows what they got to do. Having Drevno be a guy who's been, you know, kind of a, you know, the run guy and, O-line guy and, coordinator at Michigan where they didn't have a quarterback. I mean, they didn't have much choice at Michigan. And obviously, they had Harbaugh and how much of a coordinator responsibilities you get with the title at Michigan, I don't know. But I do think it's a hire that helps you move in the direction I think you were already moving. But I don't think it's the, Drevno's got an idea and they asked him, and he said, "Yeah, why don't we be run first with, you know, heavy package?" No, I think they knew they had to go that route. I just think he helps them get there, and I think it looks like they're working pretty well together, and that they're all on the same. That they all knew that. I mean, I think you didn't have to watch all of last year's games, and I think they didn't know how to get away from, well, let's let Sam do it mentality. And they just, you know, they didn't block people consistently enough. And they were scrambling an awful lot of the time. And I think they know this year they can't be scrambling. They got to do what they do really well. And I think the approach, I don't know that they'd be in a different place if Drevno weren't here. I think they'd still be going in this this basic direction that you saw Saturday. But I think he helps them get there. So I think it's just a confidence level that him being here and Clay really respecting him as a run game guy helps them all be on that, you know, on that same run first. This is how we're going to do it, where they all are listening to one another. So I think it works that way, but I'm not sure that it was as a result of him, but more of him getting on the train that had already left the station, and he's you know, going to help you get there in a good way, I think.
We had a text from Alex in Stockton. He said, "Hey, Ryan, do you or Dan have any information or tips for attending the final practice, i.e. parking, activities, tailgating? Thanks." From Alex. So that's Saturday at noon, like I said, at Cromwell Field is when the final practice will be.
I'd get there early. I mean, you know, we're talking a couple of thousand seats, whether they'll let people stand around the field. I mean, one of the difficulties of having at Cromwell is there's just not much room. So it's already compacted. You don't have the extra room for the different position drills and things like that. And if they're, you know, getting ready for a game, they maybe won't do anywhere near as extensive offensive line, defensive line, all that kind of thing, but and special teams. But I'd get there early. I wouldn't be much after 11, I don't think. Park at the, you come in off Exposition there at, you got either or off Vermont, and you know, parking that, I think it's garage number 5, Ryan. I'm not always sure that, and you know, you're barely 2 blocks from the the practice, from where the practice is going to be at Cromwell. On a nice Saturday morning, anywhere you park on campus is fine, and you could walk, 5 minutes to whatever gate you come in, and whatever, you know, garage you park in, you're not going to be that far away, and you will not miss tailgating because there isn't going to be any. but enjoy the campus, and that's one of the nice things about having it on a Saturday is there's not as much going on, although for some reason, there seems to be something going on that campus, or a lot of something going on every single day. I mean, it's just a beehive of activity. I mean, there are people and tour groups and visitors and you name it all the time. So, I mean, I think the earlier the better. Give yourself time to walk around and look at the new buildings, you know, stop, look at Annenberg, you know, go to Heritage Hall. Take your time, enjoy yourself. But I would recommend early.
Yeah, same thing. And like we tried to do a tailgate. USC said they're not going to allow any tailgating for the spring game, so you can't do that. But like I said, you could go over to, if you want to get a little snack or something, go check out the USC Village. That's a cool spot. So there's restaurants there. And like I said, you can go to Trader Joe's and pick something up if you want and walk around the campus. It should be a beautiful day, and I think you'll enjoy it. All right, so there's a couple of people wrote in, Dan, about the Dan Weber game. So we're talking about the you mentioned at the top, the USC Auburn game from 2003, I believe it was. So I'll read you these and then kind of get your comments. First, Bill in Plano, he said he was at the game. He sweated his rear off in the upper deck facing the sun until it went down. I seem to remember that one or more of the defensive linemen had very low body fat for guys who play on the trenches. one had like 8% or something. I'd only expect from a corner or a wide receiver. I agree with Dan that the talent level is about the same, but what about the nutrition and strength and conditioning aspect? Our current defensive line seem overall a little fluffy compared to 03. P.S. I got home from that game, and my next door neighbor, who is Vern Lundquist's brother, says, hey, if I'd have known you'd have been there, Vern could have visited with you before the game. He said that would have been cool, both literally and physically. So that was from Bill. And we also had Don write in. Decided to watch the Dan Weber game. USC will never be that dominant again unless Clay Helton changes his philosophy. These current USC teams do not have the same competitive spirit. The current defense is capable of shutting down the Pac-12. Will they be able to shut down the SEC / Big Ten and other conference champions? I believe in Clancy and his defensive coordinator abilities. What does Helton have to do to get to that elite level? JT is so much better than Jack and Matt. He needs to start even if he gets to camp just before the first game. There is a bigger gap between JT and his competition than there was between Sam and Max. That's from Don. So a couple guys, Bill
yeah,
and
I mean,
Don.
I have made the case to coaches that I would show them that Auburn film every day between now and the start of the season. Honest to God, I'm that impressed with. I was there. I don't even remember them going after Auburn in person as much as when I see it on film. And I just think, oh my goodness, look at that. I mean, that was a really good Auburn team. That was an Auburn team that was unbeaten the next year and thought they were the national champs. They sent all kinds of guys on to the NFL, all kinds of starting backs and quarterbacks and running backs, and they didn't have a chance. I mean, USC didn't let them in the game. They just flat out just beat them up. I mean, and they went after them. So, I mean, it was unfair almost. Can this team play with that kind of, you know, ferocity? Can Marlon and Jay those guys, I mean, and Brandon, can they be, you know, the Sean Cody, Kenichi Udeze, type guys that just flew by them and just threw them to the ground? I mean, can you get linebackers that can play like Lofa and Matt Grudiger did, or Darnell Bing, first game he ever played in his life, and first pass Auburn throws, he intercepts it. The Auburn quarterback was running for his life, obviously. He probably shouldn't have thrown the ball that deep in their own territory. I think Auburn coach Tommy Tuberville knew how athletic, how quick, how active USC's defense was. I don't think he knew they were as good. I don't think we did. I don't think anybody did as good as that team. And if they can play with that kind of ferocity and togetherness, I think you got to go into the year thinking we're going to be better than the Pac-12. We're just going to be. Can you make that next step up? Can you be better than the Ohio States and the Notre Dames when they're good? And whoever else, you know, you might end up playing. I think that's what this team has to look forward to as to a goal, is we're not going to just be that team. We're going to be that, you know, we're going to be that 2003 team. We're going to be that team that just doesn't let anybody play against us or it makes life just really, really difficult. And that's how you win on the road early in the year, when teams aren't really quite where they hope to be either. And you just take them out of their game. Because I asked Clay that yesterday, what do you feel like when the quarterbacks that you're working with are throwing balls that you got guys like Marvell Tell and Marshall breaking perfectly on, and, you know, pick sixes just off their fingertips, you know? And Clay said, you know, first you want to, you know, puke in a bucket when you think about what happened with your quarterbacks, but then you got to realize this is how we're going to win football games with this defense. So I think it's and let's face it, USC, after Pete, the defensive coach, you had three straight quarterbacks in Lane and Sark and Clay, and you really need to, I think, not think like a quarterback if you're going to be a head coach. And I think in this case, you want to think like Pete did. A defense first. And Clay did say that yesterday. That's what defense wins championships, and defense wins those games on the road. And I think, you really have to believe that. And you got to feel great about those guys making those plays and taking things away, as much as that, maybe worries you a little bit about the offense. But I think this offense will be better for having had to play against the defense that's just trying to not let them do anything. But you're right. If they get anywhere near that 2003 defense, this team will have a chance.
All right. We got a couple more, sort of off topic-ish. We'll let you go. Chris, another one from Chris at Long Beach and living in San Fran. After the 10th practice, Coach Helton mentioned he wished he could have 10 more practices. A lot of coaches say stuff like this. My question is there any discussion around the NCAA extending spring camp? Do you think, do you guys think there's any chance spring camp could one day be the entire length of the spring semester? Since you guys see practice face on, do you think it would be a good idea to extend spring practice even by a little? Fight on, from Chris.
Chris, no, I don't think so. I think 15, if you can't get it done in 15, because you got them the whole time. I mean, they may practice Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, but you got them Monday, Wednesday, and Friday also. So no, I don't, I think 15 is enough. And, it doesn't help you, for example, with the guys that are coming in the summer. They're not going to be here. And they've kind of extended, summer practice. You're going to get 25 workouts. So that ought to be enough. I think 40 workouts with spring and summer together, I think that's enough to get ready for next season with, all the winter work, conditioning and strength, and the summer conditioning and strength and throwing. I think it's enough. I don't know that you need to do any more, than they're doing now. I think, you just got to be really effective with what you're doing. You got to know what you're doing, why you're doing it, and what you're doing, you have to get it right. You got to be doing the right thing. And this is a team, I think, that is very, very the success of this year's team is really, and I know this is obvious in college football, it really dependent on the success of the coaches. And this is this is a year when coaching is just all important. I mean, there are years, it's always in college football, it's always in basketball the same way. The best coaches are the guys that are standing at the end of the year. I mean, here, Nick Saban yesterday, they're at the White House, they're at the Rose Garden. We were kidding on the sidelines. We thought they take pads? Were they were they hitting, while they were waiting for, the president? But here was Nick Saban at the White House making recruiting phone calls yesterday. So that's what you need. I mean, the guy's relentless, and you got to be relentless. You just have to do it all right. And he's, whatever the rules are, he's going to take advantage of them. Whatever the coaching, hires are out there, or guys that are still getting paid by their old school, and he can get them as interns, he's going to do it, and he's been doing it, and two of them are at USC's expense to some extent.
Yeah.
and so that's how you compete, and I think USC is doing some of that. I mean, they've got they got Coach Drevno, who's still he got a nice walking away, present from Michigan. They got the DeForest guy who got let go at Kansas, so they're doing some of that. USC is, and I think you have to. You have to kind of compete where the competition is, and but I think this is a real coaching heavy year. When you have guys, for example, that have maybe been 2 years, they're allowed to be graduate assistants for 2 years. And now you're starting to see those guys get bumped up to analysts, and where they add an analyst or whatever, instead of you know, after they've had him, you know, around the program for a couple of years, and then say, okay, we're going to keep you around. We'll figure out a way to keep you around. I think that's the kind of thing you have to do at this point to compete at that very, very elite top level.
We have a Pac-12 question on a voicemail. I'll play it for you and get your thoughts.
JD from DC with this question for Dan. Dan, with the recent breaking news that the Pac-12 left approximately $30 million on the table through its inept lack of competitive participation in the NCAA tournament, don't you think it's about time that Max and or the board of directors got on this whole conference issue? I mean, from a fiscal and competitive standpoint, it's an absolute disaster. We're talking, you know, back of the envelope, $20+ million that USC is leaving on the table every day because of the, basically the way the conference is run. You know, at some point, I understand this is USC, it's all about money, but this is real money. I mean, if that money isn't coming in from the conference, Max has got to go out and raise it, right?
Yeah, I think I would pick my spots. And Max is the CEO group of the CEO group of the Pac-12. Max is in charge. Max is, well, he's the head, let's say that. And I think I'd pick my spots. And I think the first one I picked was, I think USC and UCLA should go together and say, it's time to deep six the Pac-12 network. It's not worth it. Why is USC's game, whatever you want to call it, Saturday at noon? Because the Pac-12 network wanted it there for their programming of spring games. I mean, who cares what the Pac-12 network wants to do? And why should USC, for the little money that they're getting, I think they're now, Pac-12 has had the most precipitous drop. They've gone from 11 million to 19 million homes, which is like a drop in the bucket because they're on Dish Network or whatever. But they've dropped off. They're getting like 5 cents a home or something. It's like they've had the largest drop in subscriber fees of anybody,
yeah,
any of the networks in the country. It's ridiculous how bad it is now.
I think it went from 30 cents to 11 cents. But the new one, the new homes that were added were because of like Sling, which is owned by Dish, but those only get the regional networks, and those they're only paying 5 cents per. So they added more, but they added someone that's paying a lot less, and it's brought the average down. So there was only like four networks that dropped, and one of them happened to be the Tennis Channel where Larry's used to be. So, but like Dan said, the Pac-12 dropped the most of all the networks that dropped.
Yeah, and so, okay, and they're saying, well, but we'll give each school like $2.75 million. And I can't even guess what the numbers would be, but let's say we know that from a guy who did this for Iowa State, that Iowa State was taking in, because they don't have a network in the Big 12, so they did their own basketball and football games that weren't on the major network. So if USC could market its own basketball and its own football separate from the ones that are with the Pac-12 network. Let's just say the two or three games that go on the Pac-12 network. USC had the ability to do that. They would make, and UCLA the same way, so much more than the $2.75 million that they're going to get from the network this year. And that's so, you know, that's just peanuts compared to what the SEC and the Big Ten networks are going to distribute. And what does it do? It doesn't do anything other than bring you bad, you know, game times and bad starts. And and nobody sees it. I mean, that they literally are essentially family members are watching and nobody else. And the problem is most of them go to the games in person. So you only have maybe homebound family members who watch the Pac-12 network. It's a disaster, and I do think that would be the place to start, to just say, look, why don't we just shut it down, sell the equipment, tell everybody to go away. We'd save all the money that they're, you know, that they've been spending on the Pac-12 network. It would take away the excuse that all these top officials at the Pac-12 need to be double salaried because they're doing so much work on the network as well as on the conference, and say, you're on your own. And I know people like, you know, Oregon State and Washington State might not like that. But I don't think USC and UCLA have any other choice. I think they've got to start with, let's get rid of the network. It's a disaster. And then start working on what would get, you know, wider distribution. Is there a way that they could approach Fox, for example, and say, you know, is there one of the Fox regional channels that has national distribution that would work really well to distribute, say, every USC and UCLA, you know, basketball game that's not on, on the major network? And first of all, USC and UCLA both have enough TV expertise and equipment that they can, you know, and there's not a school in the country now that can't broadcast their own soccer games and, you know, baseball games and water polo games and all of that. You don't really need to bring in a crew from the Pac-12 and pay them to do that. Schools have all that ability right now. And it would be more of an educational experience, obviously. It'd be much cheaper to do it that way. And easily as effective, you might have better distribution. So I think you're right. This is a crisis time where they just have to end it, not mend it. I don't think it's mendable, the Pac-12 network or the Pac-12 relationship that USC has there. It's just, and the dollars are just flying out the door. The $30 million that between what the top networks got from this year's NCAA tournament and what the Pac-12 got are irreplaceable. I mean, there's this, you know, I mean, it's a disaster. I know the SEC a few years ago, when they weren't doing as well, they decided they'd do something about it. And they hired a guy to run college basketball in the SEC every single day. They went and hired the commissioner of the Big East, Mike Trangisi, who'd done such a great job with the Big East, to kind of oversee it. And what did they have? 8 teams in the tournament this year. And this is the SEC. This is the football SEC, not the Pac-12 with the basketball heritage in the Pac-12. And yet they did something about it. And the Pac-12 just sits there and doesn't do anything about stuff like that. Somebody's got to take the leadership role. I think, you know, Max Nikias is in a position to do that. And I think USC is in a position to do that. I think it's time where USC has to pretty much assert itself and say, look, this is what has to happen. And we're not going to take, you know, no for an answer at this point, because this is not working. And the people at the Pac-12 have no answers. All of their answers basically have been proven to be disastrously incorrect. And they, you know, they don't have any idea what they're doing. How would they get the right answer? But USC needs to take the leadership role at this point. And you're absolutely right.
And one last topic, Dan, before I let you go. It's about Todd McNair. We had a text from Marcel and an email from Jason. I'll read you both. Marcel says, San Gabriel Valley wants comments about the Todd McNair trial. And he was talking about, there was an LA Times article that came out recently. And then Jason in Longhorn Country said, do you think this McNair case will actually make a difference as to the nationwide perception of SC or the NCAA? For example, ESPN did not even run an article about the Emmert deposition. CBS Sports ran an article but noted that the judge was an SC alum. The LA Times is running articles, but people around the nation will view that as Homer reporting. It seems like even if McNair wins big and the NCAA is hammered and exposed, that the press will either not cover it or spin it to make it look like the NCAA got bullied by Homer judge/court.
Yeah, I think that'll play into it. But I think if it goes to trial next week, I think the potential of, I mean, the media likes sensational trials. And I think that the trial has the potential to be sensational. USC is conflicted, however, because they didn't ever, once they, you know, the initial defense of Todd McNair, you know, went away, USC pretty much distanced themselves from anything to do with this case. So when Judge Schaller rules that, you know, the NCAA couldn't get this case dismissed and that you know, he was going to look at the emails, and he looks at them and he says, you know, they're clearly, you know, there's malice here and grounds for defamation. Yes, he didn't respond at all. They acted like that didn't happen. So USC set the tone for not paying attention to what was going on in the McNair case. So it would be almost unfair if USC got any benefit going forward at this point. I think they will. I think people know what happened. They don't want to necessarily admit it. I think the McNair case can make that, you know, be more of a reality. But I don't know that they can avoid it if it is, you know, the kind of a trial that the potential for the kind of trial. There isn't a lot else going on in college sports at you know, starting next week. So I think it has the potential to draw the kind of attention. But, you know, whether it'll be just the fact that, you know, here's the NCAA lied and corruptly changed facts and broke their own rules in order to take USC down, they had to destroy the career of Todd McNair. I think on a personal level, you know, on a human interest level, that's a really big, important story. Whether it institutionally goes to benefit USC, obviously the NCAA did all that to hurt USC as badly as they could. And they treated USC in ways they didn't treat anybody else. So whether that comes through, I don't know. You know, does it come through to USC's benefit, or do people say, wow, USC took all that? They treated them like that, and you know, Ohio State wouldn't have taken that. You know, Notre Dame wouldn't have taken that. Oregon wouldn't have, Alabama, no SEC school would have taken that. Wonder why USC did. That's the potential, you know, that might come out of it. And people would say, well, why would our school wouldn't have allowed the NCAA to do that to them? What about, why did USC? And I know that was always the theory was, well, there must be a lot more going on that they just don't want anybody to know about or whatever. So I'm not going to predict how this might redound to USC's benefit. I just would like it to redound to Todd McNair's benefit and to the NCAA's everlasting, disrepute. That you want them to come out of here looking as bad as they acted, and they acted really badly. And some of those people are still there, and they ought to have to answer for it. And hopefully the trial does that.
All right. Dan Weber does a great job for us over at uscfootball.com. We'll see him out there at practice tomorrow. Two practices left, Thursday, 3 p.m. At Howard Jones Field. You can come check that out if you're free. And, of course, Saturday we talked about the final spring practice, and looking forward to those two, Dan, and we'll see you out there chatting more about all the spring stuff, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Yeah, okie doke, and both in full pads, we might note, for Thursday and Saturday, so always a good sign.
Yeah, no pads on Tuesday, which was a little bit but moving forward, full pads for the rest, so that'll be good. So that's Dan Weber. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.